The trouble, or rather one trouble with your Orthodox brethren, is, they know nothing about spiritual resurrection. You believe that what they are preaching is the resurrection of the body. Man preserves his identity and lives on in the spiritual world, building up the foundation he had laid in his early stage of being. It is evident that there is an awakening all over the land on the subject of spiritual truth as taught by the philosophy of spiritualism. He who says that spiritualism accepts, endorses, recognizes or tolerates the doctrine of free love, is mistaken. The worst man that ever lived does not deserve unending, helpless suffering. Give everybody a chance, either here or in the spirit world. Man is actuated by his ruling love, and his associates on earth are probably in sympathy with that love. Be guided in every action more by the inward voice than by any external direction, inasmuch as the internal is, and the external is not, the true reality. A man may assume a virtue and thus deceive his friends, but on the spirit side nothing is covered that shall not be revealed, nor hid that shall not be known. The 15th, 16th and 17th centuries were remarkable for visions, and the 3rd, 4th and 5th for miracles. The visions were substantially the same as your mediums have, and the miracles correspond to the cures by magnetic healers in your day. The little I have seen of your world and know of the history of mankind teaches me to look upon their errors in sorrow, not in anger. When I look at one poor heart that has sinned and suffered, and represents to myself the struggles it passed through, the briefer pulsations of joy, the tears of regret, the feebleness of purpose, the scorn of the world that has little charity, the desolation of the soul's sanctuary and threatening voices within, health gone, happiness gone, I would fain leave the erring soul of my fellow man with him from whose hand it came. Friends, let the standard of thought and action which mortals have erected be made subservient to the divine and immutable standard which is presented in nature and developed in soul. Spiritualists can understand, if their Christian brethren cannot, how Paul was caught up into the third heaven or sphere, and the beheld things unspeakable, without leaving the body. The character of a man's future for good or ill, whether happy or otherwise, is in a great measure dependent upon himself, at least upon him, as well as the material growth of a tree. A true, faithful spiritualist labors with disinterested feelings and motives for the good and happiness of others. It is an evidence of mental weakness to doubt the existence of the soul because your fingers cannot grasp it. We want salvation in the world. In the spirit world we will have it, because you take it with you. Once upon a time a fond mother took her little 5-year-old daughter into the spare room and spent 3 whole hours in describing to her young mind the beauties of the Orthodox heaven, how they all would stand before a great white throne and wave palms and shout hymns to the Lord forever. Then turning to the sweet, innocent baby, she said, "You must always be good, then the Lord will let you stand before him and sing and wave palms, too." "I will, Mama," she said, "and if I am real good and wave lots of palms, don't you think the Lord will let me take my dolly some afternoon and go down to hell and play with the devil's little girls?" The child had a clearer and better conception of what constituted dwelling with God than her mother had. He who gives intellectual assent merely to the reality of spiritual intercourse and spirit manifestation has but a very slight conception of the universality of the law of spirit influence and control. An intellectual assent is but little more than a preliminary or introductory step towards an understanding of the true relations which a universal law has established between the spiritual and material worlds. These relations are most intimate, and the object and aim of their establishment were to allow the people of the two worlds to become cooperative, and this cooperation is beneficial to you in proportion to your worthiness to secure benefit of intelligence higher than you are in moral and spiritual growth. It seems, however, that if one steps outside of the customary forms and practices, he is denounced as a crank, an eccentric, an unsafe guide. Originality is always at a discount. Every invention is first pronounced a failure. Every new thought has to force its way to recognition. Any change which affects the general trend of the people, either in thought or action, is met with stern resistance. Some ministers preach what they personally believe, and others preach what their audience believes. One leads his people, the other follows them. Some labor for hire, others to gratify ambition, still others are impelled onward in his work by neither of these considerations, but by an invisible impulse that they can neither stay nor understand. The merchant, the time server, counts money, time, calculates chances, takes note of expenses in all the affairs of life, while the philanthropist, the philosopher, the scientist, the artist and the genius make no account of these questions, but simply work for the accomplishment of their purpose without regard to personal ends. You should regard your talents as a gift to all divine intelligence and hold them as a sacred trust. He should not only glorify his calling but be glorified and ennobled by it. The higher the ideals, the better the work. All of the great poets, philosophers and geniuses have seen visions or had some influences more or less from the spirit realms and felt their guidance. Some of the brightest and greatest men the world has produced have been called cranks. You must try to develop your individuality, then you will have more power to exert. Friends, did you ever stop to think that a great percent of talk of your world is valueless? It brings no revenue, it imparts no information. The closer you keep to nature, the nearer you are to spiritual understanding, for spiritualism is divine and a product of nature's laws. Spiritual spheres and conditions. Swedenborg. Friends, there are many spiritualists, yet not one in 50 among intelligent spiritualists of the present day, who knows what these doctrines are. The majority of people have heard something about them, and naturally suppose that what they heard is correct, but they will generally find, on careful inquiry, that what they have heard is very far from the truth. Many persons ridicule this doctrine, who know little or nothing of it beyond what they have learned from persons no better informed than themselves. The doctrine of spiritual spheres is unknown to many of the spiritualists. But many of them recognize its truth as soon as it is clearly stated, yet not until it is thoughtfully pondered, can you expect one to see how important it is in a practical point of view. You believe that there are particles too small for the eye to discern even by the aid of the most powerful microscope, constantly emanating from all material objects, and form around each a kind of atmosphere which in their essential nature, are similar to the object itself. This atmosphere is too refined and subtle to be detected by the senses, yet its existence round about thousands of objects, often manifests itself to the sense of smell, and in a dog, this sense is so acute that he can scent his master's fear in the print of his shoes and distinguish his tracks from all others. The perfume of the lily or the rose is but the extension of the flower's own substance, the radiation or emanation of its own essence in the most subtle form. It is so of all other objects that diffuse an odor, grateful or otherwise. From the analogies of nature, therefore, it is reasonable to conclude that souls also have their encompassing spheres, and that these must be spiritual, and of the same quality in every case as the souls from whence they emanate. Do you know that every mind has an encompassing atmosphere similar in its essential nature to the mind itself, that thought, true or false, good or evil, would have extension, and exert an unconscious influence upon other minds, healthful or baneful, according to its own nature? Do you know that every heart is constantly carrying with it its own sphere, a sphere more penetrating and powerful, especially in its effect on the voting, and persons oftenest within its reach, than any oral or written instruction? There are spheres of selfishness, hatred, conceit, pride, jealousy, avarice, contempt and revenge, spheres of love, joy, peace, humility, reverence, confidence and trust, and that particular character or quality of spiritual sphere emanating from, and encompassing each individual, would be in all cases according to the character of the individual, not according to his or her words or outward actions, unless these were in agreement with his or her internal feelings and purposes. Anyone of much spiritual discernment, or who is at all susceptible to the influence of mental spheres, if he or she has ever been long in the immediate presence of very saintly or vile persons, knows from personal experience that what we have here spoken of, as altogether reasonable, is actually true. Go with us into the humble cabin or poorly furnished chamber of some good soul. How you will feel a sweet and heavenly peace as perceptibly as you ever smelled the perfume of clover blossoms or new-made hay, and experience is inexplicable upon any other theory than that of the existence of spiritual spheres. Do you know that a certain spiritual sphere encompasses you according to the life of your affection, which sphere is more perceptible to the spirits than a sphere of odor is to the most exquisite sense in the world? The spheres which are perceived in the spirit life all arise from the loves and consequent affections in which the spirits had been principled, consequently from the life, for loves and consequent affections made the doctrine concerning spiritual spheres cordially accepted, and, it is plain that its practical tendency and effect upon the receiver must be most salutary. This shows the present guardian and teacher and all who have the shaping of other minds, that it is not so much what they seem or say or do, as what they are not what they are outwardly but what they are inwardly, not so much their oral instructions, wise or otherwise, as the vital currents of thought and feeling perpetually flowing forth from their innermost and ruling love that mold the character of those under their charge. It is this spiritual atmosphere, extensive in itself and far-reaching enough to encompass a multitude of minds, that the souls are inhaling continually day by day, and hour by hour. How important it is then that this atmosphere be pure and sweet as the flower of heaven. We want to tell you, kind friends, that there is a spiritual world inhabited by spirits far more populous than the world in which you are now living, and as much more substantial, too, as the soul is more substantial than the body. All the inhabitants of the spirit world were once dwellers on your or some other earth, having commenced their existence on the lower plane of human life. It is easy to believe this, if you reflect upon what is happening every day in your world. Nor is there any space existing in the spirit world, yet things appear to be in space here, and spirits appear to go from place to place by the exercise of their powers of locomotion, the same as on earth. There are societies in the spirit spheres, some of them consisting of many hundreds of thousands of spirits, and as all in any society are not equally wise, you must expect to find some kind of government over here, and you should expect also that the wisest and best of the spirits would be appointed to take charge of the government, those who are least in the love or thought of themselves, and most in the thought and love of serving and who best know how to serve. We wish to state that everyone for the particular governmental position he or she is called to fill and is perceived and acknowledged by all, and that all administrative powers are so kindly and wisely exercised that no friction is felt in the work, but all move on as smoothly and harmoniously as a loving family or healthy human body. We say that there are governments and societies in the spirit spheres, and that there are various different conditions in the higher spheres from what they are in the lower spheres, and differing also according to the ministries performed by each society. But they all agree in this, that they regard the general good as their end, and in that good, every individual is a participant. This results from the facts that all in the spirit spheres are under the auspices of the all-wise teacher and leader who love all, and from divine love, ordains that the common good shall be the source of good to every individual. Some live in magnificent palaces and in more elevated situation than others. There are also temples for worship in the spirit spheres, for the spirits are being continually perfected in wisdom and love, and social conditions, here as well as on your earth there, are all means of growth. All who die in infancy and childhood go directly to the spirit spheres, that is, they pass immediately into a sphere of societies, and are instructed and governed by the higher spirits. Some become higher by intelligence. It does not depend on the character of their parents, as to whether they are religious or wicked. They have the same spiritual organism, and the same infantile forms and infantile minds that they had while in the world. They do not forever remain infants. They advance here to the full stature of men and woman. They grow by the assimilation of spiritual substance, as children in your world grow by assimilation of material substance, for the bodies of both spirit and man are formed of the substances belonging to their respective worlds. Children in spirit spheres do not grow old as they do in your world. They never advance over here beyond a period of early manhood or womanhood, but retain forever the freshness and bloom belonging to that age. But they must attain to the highest perfection of the spirit form in order that they may reach spirit life in its fullest sense, and have their faculties unfolded, strengthened and perfected in the highest degree. This doctrine is not, as some suppose, a petty conceit or mere human invention, but has its foundation in the constitution of things, and is as true and exact as the science of mathematics. The life of the spirit in the spheres is as one of gladness resulting from bliss, and consists in performing deeds of goodness which are works of charity. Those who have led a life withdrawn from worldly affairs, are possessed with the idea of their own merits, and are thence continually desirous of being admitted into the spirit spheres, and think of that joy as a reward, being totally ignorant of what that joy is. And when you are admitted among the spirits, and to a perception of their joy which is without the thought of merit, and consists in active duties and services openly performed, and in the blessedness arising from the good which they thereby promote, they are astonished like persons who witness things altogether foreign to their expectation. These things reveal to you the law as of the soul's high life, and to develop within you a pure and holy character, a pure and unselfish love, and the higher and purer the truth you accept, the higher and more blessed the state of life to which you may reach. Order of Natural Causes. Dr. Reed. Friends, when mankind have turned their backs on the right and plunged themselves into thick darkness, when habits of sin have blighted the conscience, and taunted and defiled every faculty of the soul, when the laws of nature have been broken, and denounce a curse against those who have trampled them under their feet, and when the pall of death broods over the whole race, and with no return from the grave has almost blotted out all faith in the soul's immortality, when life is short and death is near at hand and conscience accuses, and the laws of fear and remorse separated the souls of men from their great teacher, it needs a clearer and stronger voice than that so far heard, to restore peace to the troubled heart, to subdue the inveterate force of sin and open the pathway of a new life to the blighted soul. Spiritualism is complete and effective and meets every want of the human soul. As the phenomena and philosophy of spiritualism are true, no one to whom it is fully made known can reject them unless from the strong bias of an evil heart of unbelief, and no one truly receives it until the proper time and by the power of affection. You must yield to an influence still more powerful than sensual appetite or pride of false reason to the mighty attraction of the laws governing spiritual intercourse and the constraining power of evil. We bring the key which will unlock by degrees a thousand mysteries, and solve a thousand enigmas in your world. Even those who bring the key with them must often be content to wait, and the solution of each particular doubt or difficulty may depend on the previous solution of those in earth life. The credibility of events and demonstration, and the value of testimony are determined by the fixed laws of nature. It seems that the more remarkable any occurrence is, the more unprepared you are to view it calmly. Disbelief of an event or a phenomenon by no means implies a denial of the honesty or veracity of the impression on the mind of its doubter. It means merely that the probability of some mistake, somewhere, is greater than that of the event happening in the way, or from the causes assigned. Then again, if any strange, unaccountable fact were observed at the present day, an unbiased, educated person would not doubt for a moment, if a physical student, that it was due to some natural cause. These results have arisen from the growing study of the phenomena of natural law. This philosophy is based on one grand truth, the universal order and constancy of natural causes. Your own experience reveals the constant action of the human will upon the human body, and upon all portions of matter that lie within the range of the muscular strength and physical powers of man. True, these are small indeed, compared with the forces ever at work in the great cosmical system, but still their action, through successive ages, has wrought sensible effects even on the physical condition of spiritual things on earth. Then let us conceive of spiritual beings who have power over matter and seeming immutability of physical law, even in the case of planetary movements. But you say you have no proof from reason alone that such creatures exist in the universe. But you have proof, However, on grounds of pure reason, and demonstration, that the constancy for thousands of years of the planetary courses, undisturbed by spiritual agencies immensely more potent than the human will, is a counterpart on a large scale to the quiet and silent growth of all life. If a message from a spirit in the higher or lower realm which affirms its own origin, and was accompanied by no credential worthy of its author, it would be open, without defense to the charge of being a mere dream of imagination, and might be transferred at once from the region of facts and real history to the imagination. There are facts fixed, unalterable, internal and incapable of being varied by the will of man, or a personal God. The truth will never be revealed to you so long as you shrink from the duty which seems to be in the highest plane, however difficult to fulfill, and to know what the basis is on which the whole of your spiritual consciousness stands. There must be facts which hold up all the spiritual edifices of thought and life. You will never be at peace so long as you doubt one another. Why are you afraid, as you seem to be, in dealing with the greatest truth? Is it because you are narrow in the limits of human understanding, and relegated to the depths of mystery? Is not the prevailing tendency of the mind the confession of its own importance? And yet it does not at all follow, because you fail to grasp great truths with the hand of conceptive power, which is understanding, and which is trained to lay hold of spiritual things and such. Truths must be ignored and put back into an abyss of the unknown and unknowable. You may not be able to formulate any definition in spiritual things which are accepted by all spiritualists, but you may nevertheless be able to open to the clear view of the soul what these primary truths are which come forth to the people, and in the spirit world. So it is in your study of nature, scientific systems and schemes of inductive reasoning, on facts, and conclusions and anticipations drawn from facts, and the work of human thought and observation. But it remains the greatest fact of all, the universally known and acknowledged of all truths, such as the continuity of life and all forces and existences, and the steadfastness of a natural law. And yet the unbelieving man of science is content to use familiar abstract terms to describe these facts. There are more things in the spirit realms and on earth than are dreamed of in all your philosophies. Spirits have been speaking to men in every age and in every place. Gems of thought. Dr. Reed. Annihilation would be a blessing in comparison to the orthodox idea of immortality. All truths, both spiritual and natural, harmonize. One truth cannot be opposed to another truth. A deep, impenetrable gloom is always hanging between the evil-minded and the celestial world. All creation is a matter of growth, the moral creation of the soul being that of which you have no certainty. Yet there are those in other faiths who do face death without a fear or tremor, to whom it means but an incident in the whole story of life. Don't think that the shadow of death is so black because you have put about it your superstitious customs, you have allowed it to become in your thinking the triumph of an archenemy, you have accentuated the dark aspects with your accidental customs of mourning, and you seem to have lost faith in the persistence of life. You hold the creed of immortality with your lips and deny it with your acts. You think the sorrow of parting is bitter enough without your deliberate end of life to add to the gall in the cup. If you believe the words you say, why should you fear to die, and why should you weep as if those who have gone from you had passed forever from the world of sunshine into some dark and cheerless land? What sort of heaven can there be, my friends of earth, if you thus mourn when your loved ones pass over there? What right have you to talk of death as if it were the inevitable proof of the undoing of some infinite power of darkness? If you believe that the Lord of all life rules the universe here, and that love is stronger than even the grave, might you not turn to see in this but an end of one chapter, a beginning of the page for the next, a step in the journey into new and better scenes? You usually hold a creed involving belief in immortality, but because you have made that future so strangely conditioned, so dubious, because you have allowed yourselves to be whipped like dull slaves by the mortal terrors of the grave into superstitious subjection, you have lost the real value of immortality. You live in dread of dying. How can you lose the fear of death? not by any drafts on imagination as to the felicities that await a few beyond the grave, but by coming in contact with the spiritual forces and by emphases on the value of life itself, by so filling the present with this power and value that it becomes victorious over any fear for the future. The better you make the life that now is, the more you may be assured of its duration through all vicissitudes. There are values and realities in earth life that death cannot touch. What poor bundles of clay you are if you may be destroyed, utterly blotted out by slight chemical changes. What a narrow view of life is yours if the grave may touch its really vital being. Every true man knows he is immortal. You can laugh and bid defiance to all that destroys the flesh, for you are more than clay. Spiritualism overcomes the fear of death. You see life as that which goes on from stage to stage and moves in into better beings and steps ever forward into the light of eternal peace. This is the message of spiritual light and truth. It points beyond the crumbling clay to the laws which show all life everlasting and fends its endorsement in the undying hope cherished through all generations in the breasts of men that beyond the door of death you enter into the larger room. Then fear turns to hope and the dread of death to the glad expectation of a freer and better life. It is said that no man can tell by what power he or she is controlled. You often act from impulse, impression, without thought or reason. Moments of inspiration are not under the control of the mind or the will. They travel in no well-defined orbit, their appearance cannot be foretold. The most beautiful thoughts and its expression are fleeting, they have to be caught on the instant or they are forever gone. Art sometimes is an improvement on nature, but it more often deforms. Men and women display physically and outwardly what they are, mentally and spiritually. When the heart speaks one language and the lips in other words, they lose their meaning. Every person is controlled, none are free. You are all subject to natural laws as well as human laws. A hospital nurse's experience. Pauline Frederica Strong. For 15 years I was a hospital nurse and attended more largely on the poor ward patients. It would be difficult for you to imagine one half the misery and pain that was pressed into my existence all through that most exceedingly unhappy time. Yet I was never happy unless I was doing something for some sufferer, and so you see I could no more change my life or my vocation than I could create myself over again. It naturally had fallen to my lot all the years almost of my life, to hear the woeful tales of sorrow from almost every mortal I came in contact with, and was almost driven to nursing from sheer sympathy. I soon found that my strong feelings of tenderness for those afflicted made me overweak and unfit for duty. And so the years brought the discipline, courage and success, and lost me love, truth and purity. For as I witnessed such a multitude of suffering I began to grow more and more calloused to its call until I went at the call of duty only as a machine goes which is set in motion mechanically and at the will of its operator. Something was dying in me. Not my good physical health, for I was most unusually robust, but something which used to speak to my inner consciousness, from my own inner self, that still small voice which men and women call the conscience for want of a better term. That thing was dying, even had died. When I found my faith in humankind departing I was appalled, I grew a while in terror of myself, until at last I settled down into the natural course of things, got down into a healthy material groove, reasoned from a materialistic standpoint, lived an infidel and was of the earth earthy. My associates did the same if they were successful, and if not they retired back into the places from where they came. Poor dear girls. The men I knew were a hard lot of unprincipled physicians who wielded power in finances and politics, and we nurses were trained in their school. I grew to be a good servant of mammon, worshipping at the shrine of a god of frivolous pleasures, working and toiling only for material recompense in dollars and cents and not because there might be a higher and holier aspiration in my daily labor than this. At last I came only to judge my friends' value for what prowess and power they held in the circles of the world's people, just for actually what money they possessed. And I grew to live so continually on this plane of life that my sympathies were rarely if ever awakened for the better influences in life. One cheerless, dreary, damp day in December there came a tiny half-shrunken little waif of a girl child into one of the beds of my south ward. The eyes were closed as they laid her on the bed, as if in death, and the tiny overrolled, pinched features of her face told of a certain suffering that seemed to pierce into my breast and cut like a knife, and from the first moment I saw her, I felt a strange intangible desire gripping me to stay close by her side and never leave her.